Hello and welcome to Football Furioso. We are back after the international break because, to be perfectly honest, I don't even like talking about friendlies and Continental Cups unless it's the Euros or World Cup or something that actually matters. But anyway, I'm your host, Norris Howard, as usual, back with my blood brother, Nolan the Wing. Back, what's up, bro?
Hey, happy to be back to the regular match week. Needed a nice week off, but we back.
We are indeed back, and, you know, we had a couple of monster matches that have massive ramifications on the Premier League title race. And we are going to start with the granddaddy of them all. We're going to start with Manchester City versus Arsenal. Ends up in a 0-0 draw. And I know a lot of people thought this was going to be, you know, some free-flowing barn burner classic of a match. I did not anticipate that, actually. In this match, I thought it was actually going to be a 1-1 draw. But this match actually ended up to be pretty close to what I thought it was. What about you, Nolan?
Yeah, it was the same for me. I didn't feel like it was going to, you know, be a lot of goals in it. I knew it was going to be tactical. Obviously, thought it may be a couple of more shots, a little bit more drama. It really was kind of not much of any of that, really, which is fine, you know.
I mean, I think there was drama, but I just think the drama is not what people are used to talking about. I think if you are a fan of the sport and you are a fan of the tactical side of football, then this was brilliant to watch, because what you saw was a center back pairing that dominated the match. You saw William Saliba and Gabriel literally hold Erling Haaland to no shots on target. City only was held to one shot on target entirely as a team, even though they had almost three-fourths of the possession for the whole match. It was brilliant. It was a defensive masterclass. This City has never been held goalless at home in it, like in the Pep era, like ever. This don't happen. And so I think while most people were looking for Arsenal to go out and somehow like dominate with this free-flowing ball, City is too good for that. Just like people don't free-flow against Arsenal because Arsenal are too good for that.
Yeah, and you're right. It makes sense. And you got to give kudos, I think, to Arsenal in this one, just because they already have the goal differential. So I think in Mikel Arteta's mind, he's thinking, okay, if we don't, you know, completely come in and just mess up or make a mistake, let's just play it out and see how it feels. Let's go into it more defensive, you know, frustrate them a little bit. Don't let Haaland, don't let the crowd kind of get into it. And you kind of saw that take effect. And I think the second half, it started to open up a little bit more, but you saw Arsenal kind of starting to get another man forward a little bit, just trying to see, you know what, maybe there is something in this a little bit. So
and that was part of the switch, I think, by taking off Jorginho and putting on Thomas Partey, who actually came on, and even though he got beat on the wing once, which was frustrating to watch as an Arsenal fan, but when he was in that midfield, they did look more positive. They did look like more of an attacking threat, and I think What a vote of confidence to say, all right, Thomas Partey, the man who got torched in the last match, the last time Arsenal was at the Etihad, I'm still going to put you on in this match. A title-defining match, and I'm expecting you to go out and perform. I think it was massive. I think from the Manchester City perspective, it's a missed opportunity. You're at home. If you win, you go top of the table. If you draw, you're still in third. You're not going to make up the goal differential against Arsenal. They're too good. And your star players were virtually anonymous. Foden, virtually anonymous. Haaland, we already talked about him, virtually anonymous. Julian Alvarez didn't get a sniff of the pitch. You know, Doku just...
That was probably his worst performance, I think.
Yeah, I was about to say, Doku might have put on his worst performance in a Manchester City shirt this season. And so, for as much as I've seen elements of the Arsenal fandom talking about, oh man, we should have won this and da-da-da-da-da, and Arteta didn't go for it. No, this is what it was. I think this is what the plan was.
Yep. And I'll even go back to City as well. I think that you honestly have to look at De Bruyne, who had a pretty good game, but fairly silent still. There wasn't any big moment. Like usually Foden or De Bruyne, even Bernardo Silva has like a moment. Even if they, you know, the game would have still ended 0-0, you'll say, they had moments of brilliance. There really wasn't any from them either. So it's pretty surprising. I think that it showed that Arsenal are ready to really contend. I think from now, I think this put them into the echelon and say, okay, we can match blow for blow with City, with Liverpool.
I mean, they're the only ones that have beaten the other two big teams. It's been draws between the rest of them. Arsenal has beaten Liverpool. They've beaten City. And now they've taken 4 points from the other two teams in the title race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even with Arsenal, if you look at the way at the end of the match, they kind of looked like the more positive team. You saw City kind of going off like, man, I think we kind of missed it. You know, kind of joking around a little bit. But you saw Pep getting in Jack Grealish saying, hey, you should have took this on. You could tell that Pep knows was, like you said, a missed opportunity.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. We're going to talk a little bit more about the title race and the rest of the matches coming up, because there's a huge glut of matches in the Premier League coming up. But we do want to talk about the league leaders, Liverpool, who won against Brighton 2-1. Fantastic match.
Yeah.
Nolan, what happened in this one? Because this was actually a really great watch.
Yeah, I mean, this match was high tempo, arguably one of the better ones of the weekend, besides maybe one more. But Brighton came to play. I mean, early on, they said, you know what? We're coming in here. We're not afraid of the Anfield. We're not afraid of the moment. Brighton have something to kind of play for. They're trying to get back into that, you know, European conversation. And Danny Welbeck, second minute, scored a nice volley inside of the box. And you saw Anfield start to bite their nails a little bit. but at the end of the day, Liverpool did win 2-1. They just put their foot on the gas. Luis Diaz scored in the 27th minute. Second half, Mo Salah would score a good team goal, good passing for Mo Salah in the 65th minute, which kind of sealed it from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was the game for me. Looking at Liverpool, this match and the match that they have coming up against Manchester United, like, these are the slippery games for Liverpool, right? These are the games where, you know, they got to turn up or they could lose control of the title race. And they proved that once again, even if they leave it 65th minute, I wouldn't call it late, but they leave it to the second half to be able to turn up the gas, turn up the tempo, and come out and win the match. And, you know, we've been saying kind of all season, like, man, Liverpool is flying close to the sun. Like, they're going to have to fall. And they just ain't. You know what I mean? Like, it's the same stuff we're used to Manchester City doing of like, oh, yep, okay, it's February, bet. They're not about to lose again. And it's still possible, but it just seems like it's been so long since we've had three teams that I could look at the remaining matches and go, they might mess around and not lose any of them.
Yeah. I mean, you just look at, like, Liverpool. It's in their hands. I mean, at this point, the 0-0 draw was so big for Liverpool in the eyes of saying, look, they duked it out. It came to 0-0. We don't have any extra pressure to, like, go out or hope that they lose. If we just keep winning, we will win the title. So I think this is so interesting because if someone slips, oh my goodness.
And you know, again, this is also the Premier League. So it is possible that somebody does slip. I mean, you know, you think about Arsenal and Manchester City are both still alive in the Champions League. Big matches coming up against Bayern and Real Madrid, respectively, for those two teams. Liverpool, you know, they're not as worried, you know, in terms of the match, the fixture list and all that. But at the same time, they know that they have to keep winning, right? And it's always better. They always say it's always better to be chased than to chase. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure in the Premier League. I in many ways, it's weird. Sometimes second or third almost feels better because you don't want to be the bottlers.
Yep.
Nobody wants to be the bottlers, you know? Nobody wants to be the team that threw it all away. You know what I'm saying? So it's going to be really interesting looking at this at the rest of the season. I think Liverpool, I think they could win out, but it's just the style of play is so risky. When I look at City and I look at Arsenal, I see two teams that play so competently that there's not a lot of teams I could see taking points off of them. But I look at Liverpool and I just go, man, they're two bad counterattacks away from potentially losing the title. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's Jurgen Klopp. That's the way it's always been. But it's so interesting to see. I think Arsenal have a slightly tougher road ahead of them compared to the other two. But it's not going to be easy for any of these three clubs moving forward. With that said, we are going to take a very quick break, and then we're going to be back and talk a little bit about the remaining fixtures of the weekend that went down. Stick around. Hey Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Football Furioso Soccer at the Speed of Sound. Your host, Norris Howard, here alongside Nolan Wing back. Nolan, Newcastle versus West Ham, the most exciting match of the weekend. West Ham, man. What happened?
West Ham is just such a team that when you watch them, you're like, okay, it's West Ham. And then they turn up and you're like, maybe I kind of like this team. And then they lose, and then you're like, what's wrong with them?
It's so hot and cold, man. They had a 3-1 lead at St. James's Park.
Yeah.
And blew it.
And I mean, Jared Bowen had a masterclass.
I ain't gonna lie, I'm getting cooked.
Jared Bowen had a masterclass. I mean, he goes out there and literally puts up like 81 points like Kobe, and then they just lose. Like, he gives so many good performances, and then they find out to draw or lose these matches. I mean, credit to Newcastle, which we haven't done much lately.
Yeah, we haven't.
They kept fighting back, and I do think that's from Eddie Howe saying, look, we have nothing to, at this point, kind of lose. We have everything to gain. Let's go out in the second half. We're down 3-1. At least get a draw. And they ended up getting a great Harvey Barnes goal.
I was about to
say,
man, look, Harvey Barnes, man. It's just every now and then, just somebody, you just have a guy who he just turns up and he just collects all the Chaos Emeralds. He got all the Dragon Balls. Something happens and he just has the match of his life. And I mean, it's going to be a day that the Toon faithful up there in Newcastle will remember for a long time, because it's been rare that it's been a long time since we've seen a individual performance like what Harvey Barnes just put on in this West Ham match. Two penalties for Isak, who also has been rumored, and the rumor mill is swirling. Is he potentially looking at a move to Arsenal, who are going to be in the market for a couple players, looking for those last few pieces for, you know, putting together almost a dynasty of title runs? They really looking to improve this squad that's already great. But Newcastle finally putting together a half. I'm not going to call it a whole match, but they put together a half that looked like the team that we knew last season.
Mm-hmm. And this is what they were predicated on, just attacking prowess, getting forward, being dangerous. You know, they were open in the first half, I think, in the back, and I think that's their worry, is getting counterattacked. But when they can put it together and not be leaky in the back, they're one of the most dangerous attacking teams, I think, honestly, when it comes to having a possession. You know, Anthony Gordon making those darting runs, and Harvey Barnes, you know, he tracks back, gets the ball, tries to push forward all the time. Isak obviously can always get on goal. So generally, the general play was just pretty direct route in the second half, and I think that's what they need from now on.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's still going to be a tough run in for them, but they play Everton next up, so it's going to be a little bit easier for them.
I ain't gonna lie, I'm getting cooked.
I don't even want to talk about this match because it's low-key pathetic. Chelsea versus Burnley at Stamford Bridge. 10-man Burnley get a 2-2 draw against Chelsea. Pochettino, what is happening, bro? What is happening?
I'll tell you exactly what's happening. It is time for the old guard at Chelsea to go, including Pochettino.
Really?
I mean, Sterling, he's not giving anything. I've watched him in this match 3 different times, get the ball in a good space and run right into a defender. He was not doing that those first 7 weeks of the season, even when he was the only bright spot. Pochettino, you know, they could be in a worse position. I'm not a fan of how the players are reacting to him now. It just seems like they need... the continuity is just not there right now. Cole Palmer has been lightning in a bottle. If it wasn't for him, they'd be 15th.
I mean, facts. It's hard to disagree with that. I think, you know, just looking at this match in a vacuum, right? You could say, all right, well, you know, any team can take some off. The red card came in the 43rd minute, right? You talk about right before the half. You had a whole half, a man up, and you still gave it away. Like, you know, you got the goal right as the red card came in, penalty, all that good stuff, right? Cole Palmer, he gets 2 goals. He's doing his thing, as we've said many times before. But Josh Cullen gets an amazing goal. Outside the box screamer. I mean, the movement on it was sickening, right? One of those sort of like high arcing dipping shots. You know, just movement is crazy on the ball. And then Cole Palmer gets a goal, 78th minute. Everybody thinking everything is fine. And then here come Darren O'Shea with another worldie as well. And it's 2-2. And you got to think, what is the back line doing?
Yeah.
You are a man up. And this goes to, and I hate to put this always on the same situation, but it comes down to the midfield. If you are a man up at bare minimum, even if you don't go out and, you know, completely dominate possession, completely dominate on the score sheet, you are supposed to at least dominate possession. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be in a low block, pushed back. They can't do nothing. And even if you don't score, you still retain most of the ball and do all the things you do. But if they're scoring goals with 10 men from outside of the box shots, that means nobody closing down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that goes further, again, why I say like Pochettino for the managing part of it is Burnley came into this match saying, Chelsea, this should be maybe easy. Like, it's the idea of going to Chelsea and thinking we can take points out of here. That's my, you know, overall problem. In the second half, they didn't come out with an overall idea, which is why Burnley was said, well, let's, you know, make it chaotic. Let's get in the midfield. Let's push forward. They were not scared. Usually you go down 10 men, you're at Stamford Bridge, you're like, let's just try to hold on here. You know, mm-hmm. we can maybe get a draw out of this, or let's at least not lose too many goal difference. They don't have much to play for, Burnley. But they were not scared, and that's my point. It's the overall idea of Chelsea right now,
yeah.
of thinking we can get something from them. That's the problem. And Chelsea feel that too, which is why they are so skittish at times and can't get those goals and go ahead and say, you know what, let's grab by the scruff of the neck, go ahead and put this away.
Yeah, and I agree with you that I think, you know, it's sad when you're seeing the players that are pushing forward are, you know, Palmer, Mudryk, you know, these guys are the ones that are saying, no, let's push, let's go for it. And, you know, you're right. The old guard, I mean, Sterling, he, you know, that's fine. He has some penetrating passes and he has some decent runs. But again, we go back to the consistency, right? For a player of Raheem Sterling's caliber, he should be significantly more consistent than what he is. And it just feels like either something is lost in translation where the manager's instructions are unclear or the setup is not conducive for how he wants to play. Something is being lost in translation at Chelsea. And I think at some point you do have to look at Pochettino and say, this team's not really getting any better. Like, I see, you know, Justo playing well. I see Cole Palmer playing well. Do I really see Jackson getting better? No.
Not really.
De Sassi has a good game here and there, but do I see him getting better?
Right.
No. And I compare that to the last youth project that we seen at Arsenal, or even to the project that we see at Aston Villa. Actually, I think Villa's a better comparison because it's the same season. This is a relatively younger team, and all of those players have gotten better.
Mm-hmm. And the difference is, look at the managers.
It's true. It's true. It's hard to deny that. Spurs versus Luton. Spurs leave it late once again. 2-1 at home against Luton Town. Son doing son things as he always does.
Just gotta love it.
He's impossible to hate. And I'm supposed to be contractually obligated to dislike him in song, and I can't do it.
You just can't. He just shows up. He just makes the runs. He tries. I mean, he's always smiling. Like,
he's brilliant.
Just can't hate him.
He's just a brilliant player. And you know what? People looked at me crazy when 3-4 seasons ago, people were just like, if you could pick any player from your rivals, who would you pick? Son. And everybody would be like, you wouldn't pick Harry Kane. No.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't.
And look at it now.
Look at what Harry Kane is on, an objectively better team. I would argue that even today, that Bayern Munich team today, if we're talking about raw talent, is pound for pound on the same level, if not a little bit better than that Spurs team that made them Champions League runs, right? I think it's fair to say that.
Definitely.
Talent for talent, this is a very, very good Bayern team that just happens to be not that great.
Yep.
Again, coaching.
Coaching.
But he's objectively on a better team in an easier league and still can't win the title. What is that telling you?
Eric Dier is the problem. No, just
Agent Dier, man. But listen, I'm telling you, that's how I feel about the situation. But you look at him and Son, and anytime they need something, anytime Spurs needs anything, whether it be an incisive pass, a big run, a shot from outside the box, somebody to make the second run to come into the box late, somebody to find Richarlison who's open, something. Every time, whatever they need on the offensive side of the ball, Son provides. Mm-hmm. And that has been his MO for the past three, four seasons at Spurs. And it's just continuing under Ange. And, you know, Nolan, I want to ask this question because, you know, obviously Spurs, they battling for the last Champions League spot. Can they keep doing this, though? Is this sustainable for them if they want to knock, you know, Aston Villa out that four spot?
I don't think they can catch Villa. I think Villa believe too much that it's theirs right now. Spurs will definitely be right there. So, I mean, crazier things have happened. My only issue with Spurs still a little bit is the defense. Mm, I think that when they get in trouble or they get those teams that want to play the long ball or get into the back really quickly, they start to get a little skittish. And a lot of those forward players have that license to go forward more so than I think to track back. And so their biggest issue, I think, is being able to, if they can shore up the defense, they have no issues going forward. You mm-hmm. can argue that they're top three most dangerous when they're on their game. I just think the defense won't allow it enough. They give up too many goals, and they have to fight back in so many games, it seems like.
It's just, I feel like they don't have a good center back pair or center back partner for Van de Ven yet. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I think they'll probably, especially if they make Champions League, they'll be more in the market. That is what I would do. I don't think he has a good partner back there, just to be honest with you. Aston Villa, we just mentioned them, 2-0 against Wolves. I mean, fairly straightforward match with fairly straightforward goals from a fairly straightforward team. Yep. I mean, it is what it is. Villa maintained their pace for potentially making Champions League football. And I said it once now, and I'll say it again. If they make Champions League, Unai Emery is manager of the season, period. They're going to give it to Klopp if Klopp wins the title just because that's poetic and all that, but it would be the wrong choice.
Yes, I can agree with you there.
Yeah.
What he's done there is amazing.
It's fantastic. And for little money, yeah. They didn't spend like crazy. A lot of those players were already there.
Mm-hmm. Just put their heads down and said, let's go out and make Champions League.
Let's go make Champions League. And a team that keeps proving us freaking wrong.
Yeah.
Manchester United, for every two matches they look great, they have another match where they look objectively just inept. Yeah. Just inept. So they go to the G-Tech Community Stadium, which I love it because it sounds like a watch brand.
Yeah, it does.
But they go to the G-Tech, and, you know, Brentford is a good team. They're a team that is not necessarily performing at level. I think not having Ivan Toney at the start of the season obviously was a huge pain point for them. However, Manchester United is supposed to walk in to Brentford and walk out with 3 points. That's what they're supposed to do. And guess what? They got outplayed for 80 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Outplayed. They looked confused. They looked bewildered. They looked run amok. They looked all the things that a team, if you, because they both wore those hideous striped jerseys.
They're the worst.
The worst, right? If you would have flipped them and said the black and white jerseys were Brentford and the red and white jerseys were Manchester United, I'd have been like, okay, that looks right.
Mm-hmm.
That's how dominant Brentford were at points of this match.
Listen, Norris, I don't do this often, but maybe every season I'm going to do it.
Okay.
I'm about to go scorched earth.
Okay.
Let me tell you something about Manchester United.
Okay.
They gave up 31 shots to Brentford. 31 shots to 11. The general attacking play, Brentford were just route one, meaning that right through the middle of the field, they were getting dominated. Just, hey, whatever you want to do, get a pass here, get a pass there. There was zero deference of, hey, maybe we should stop him from going over here. Nah, no defense is being played.
Oh, by the way, they hit the post twice and hit the crossbar once.
They had five big chances.
Yeah.
Their XG, meaning their goal that they should have possibly had, you know, obviously,
mm-hmm.
2.5.
Ridiculous.
You want to guess Manchester United's? Mm. 0.5. And we rounded that up. It was 0.4, 0.9. 0.5.
Absurd.
So if you look at it, this game should have pretty much been 3-0.
It should have been a blowout.
And you look at the sideline and you look at Ten Hag and all he's just saying is, 1-1 draw, cool. Like, it's crazy to me. Manchester United are just so bleh. They're, like you said, they're the most bleh team. And like, as a big team, you want to say, hey, the big name team went in and did what they need to do and handle business. But we can't. Every week, like you said, a couple weeks, they look good. Manchester United, they're on an upward trajectory. Are they title contenders? No. But hey, they good summer and you never know. No, they're still not there. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do about them, but they're going to be sixth again next year.
It's one of those things, man. And you're absolutely right. I mean, in just about every statistical category, this should have been a Brentford win. If anything, Brentford should be angry that they didn't beat Manchester United. Here, Mason Mount gets a goal in stoppage time, of which literally 30 seconds later, Manchester United give up a goal to Ayer. Mm-hmm. And you just knew it would happen. You knew it. The goal went in from Mason Mount. All the people are excited. The away fans are going crazy. And then a set piece happens on the other end of the field, and you just knew they were going to score. It was inevitable. I know this because I'm an Arsenal fan. And there was a point in time where you knew Arsenal could be up 3-0 at the half. And guess what? They're going to drop 2 points at least. They're going to at least drop 2 points. It's because they were so porous and lacked so much character. And that's what I see when I see this team. I see Rashford, I see Hoyland, and I see Garnacho running their behinds off all match long. I see Varane pulling the rest of that back four with nothing but twine and ACL ligaments. Right,
Lindelof has ligaments.
Right, just trying his best to hold it together. Everybody else, and even Rashford, I'm being generous. Everybody else, they not levels. I'm sorry. If I'm Manchester United, at this point, there's maybe only 7 players in the squad I keep. Mm-hmm. The rest gotta go, including Ten Hag.
Yeah.
Include them. They have no ideas. It's bad, man.
No, yeah. And I mean, you look at the bench, you say, okay, not working out there. Let's look. Oh, you got Casemiro, old. You know, I mean, love him. But legend. Old. You know, Antony, not a fan favorite, and Ten Hag doesn't like him. I don't think anyone really likes him at this point.
Ineffective. I think it's fair to call him a bust.
Yeah, though. I'm
bust.
A bust there. I mean, Christian Eriksen, obviously just getting older. Yeah, Lisandro Martinez, thin ice for him. So. And then you have Harry Maguire coming on. Like, It's just nothing there for me. I'm sorry. Honestly, we have to say Onana has went into the top 5 of their most important players this season, because even without him, or if they had obviously someone else, there's better goalkeepers.
No, but without Onana,
him, they would be further down.
Onana has kept this team in at least a Europa League conversation for the past couple months.
Yeah.
He really has. So that's crazy. Just wrapping up very quickly, 3-3 draw between Sheffield and Fulham. A lot of goals in that one. Go check it out if you want to see an exciting match. Nottingham and Forest draw 1-1, and Bournemouth beat Everton 2-1 as well. We're going to take our final break, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the Bundesliga, because things are moving. So stick around. We got more coming up. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Football Furioso. And I know we talked mostly the Premier League, but big things moving in the Bundesliga, as it wasn't necessarily the biggest match on the planet. Der Klassiker happened at the same time, but Bayer Leverkusen are looking poised to actually do it. They could actually do it. They have kept the unbeaten season alive. I believe if they win 3 more matches, it is statistically impossible for anyone to catch them. They will lock in the title. And let me tell you, it is a shambles in Munich right now. They have no clue what's happening. Nolan, hit us with some of the details from this match, because Bayer Leverkusen are so close.
Yes. So Bayer Leverkusen just left it late. They looked out of it a little bit. They were trying to press forward. And then you know what? They said, wait a second, we're Bayer Leverkusen, not Munich. And they went on and got 2 goals, one from Robert Andrick in the 88th minute, and then another by Patrick Schick in the 91st minute to win 2-1. I mean, the final 5 minutes of the match, there was not that much stoppage time in this. They won the match to stay unbeaten. And I mean, if you just looked at the way they looked in the crowd, in on the pitch, I mean, they really believe, you know what, we are one of the best teams on the planet right now. And it's beautiful to see. So I'm going to ask you, how would you feel if they joined your 03-04 Arsenal as possibly one of the unbeatens?
I love it. I mean, Juve did it as well in Serie A. I love it because, well, first of all, let me just put it this way. They not in my league.
True.
Right? When Arsenal did it, I will freely admit that the Premier League was not the pinnacle of competition that it is now, right? Like, around that time, I will arguably say Serie A was probably the best league in the world, followed then by La Liga. I don't mind this at all. I think it's fantastic, and I think it's double fantastic that it's not Bayern Munich doing it, right? I think this is good for Bundesliga. I think it's good for football in general, because it just goes to show you, you don't need the biggest budget. You don't need the superstar striker. You don't need the massive wave of state-sponsored investment that other clubs have gotten. You don't need those things. What you need is a group of talented players, an immensely brilliant and talented coach, in the right conditions to be supported by your club leadership to say, let me do what I do. And that's what happened. Don't get me wrong. They've developed Florian Wirtz, who's become a generational talent, who they're saying he's going to stay in Leverkusen. I don't know about all that, because once the check come in, you know what I'm saying, they're going to show up to his doorstep with one of them old Publishers Clearinghouse giant $189 million checks and whatnot, right? Yeah. He's going to get the bag thrown at him, so they're going to have to do a lot to keep him. It would be massive. Would be massive. It would be huge, and I would not be upset at all, because Arsenal were the first to do it, at least in the modern era. And also, I just think... it's just Harry Kane not winning another championship.
I knew it.
And I think that's magnificent.
I was waiting for it to come. But no, I agree with you. I think you hit on every single point. I think that what I like the most about it is, again, we like to see disparity sometimes. You know, we love to see the big rivalries with the title contending, which we already talked about.
Parody. We like parody. Yeah.
Parody. I apologize. No, but yes. You like to see a team, again, like you said, just ground up saying, you know what, let's go out there and play as a team. I mean, this team is so dangerous on paper. Now, when you look at them, you're like, wait a second. You know, if you look 5-6 months ago, you're like, yeah, they might be in the running. They might be okay. Yeah. No, this team right now, no one wants to play. I will argue that, honestly. So it's just nice to see. And I think, you know, Xabi Alonso, credit to him. I mean, this is one of those seasons where if they can go unbeaten, they're going to make documentaries about. Absolutely. And you want to talk about 15 years from now. Absolutely. Like, man, where were you for that 2023-24 season? So.
Absolutely. And, you know, everybody's saying, oh, should he go to Barca? Should he go to Bayern? Should he go to Liverpool? Should he go to all these places? Why? Why?
Yeah.
Well, the financial situation definitely wouldn't be better at Barca.
Yeah.
He's not going to be able to put the team together that he would want to put together at Liverpool. Absolutely not. Not without running up against financial fair play. Why not? Why not stay at Leverkusen for at least a couple more seasons, continue to be a new dominant force in European football, right? I look at it in many ways in the same way as, you know, when City really first popped up on the scene, right? Now, obviously, for different reasons, and the financial support is totally different. We got to put that caveat out there.
That's true.
Right? But when City started to become a dominant force in European football, I don't think anybody who was a City fan or anybody like that would just sit there and say, oh, I think Pep is going to go somewhere else. No, this is the place.
Yeah.
This is the pinnacle.
No, I agree with you, and I can say that. I think that if there was any place, I do think that he would maybe consider Liverpool, only because I saw what they said and say, you know, hey, this is a chance for you to go following someone like Jurgen Klopp, and if you have massive success there, you'll already be brought into that echelon of like, oh, we didn't drop at all.
And he's got the connection. He's got the connection there. If there's any team I see him going to manage is Real Madrid after Ancelotti's finished.
And that's a good idea. And I think nothing wrong. I would love to see him stay at Bayer Leverkusen, because if we could just have a good title hunt there every year, at least the next couple seasons, Bundesliga, that's great. Yeah. And I think Bayern Munich needed this slap in the face.
I agree, dude. I'm tired of, you know, Munich's dominance of the Bundesliga. It was boring. And, you know, Dortmund almost did it last season and blew it in the last game of the season. But I am so ready for all of these leagues to start having potentially 3, 4, 5, sometimes 6 teams that could run for the title. And you're starting to see that because so much money is flowing into the game that it can't be hoarded to just 2 and 3 teams. You're not going to see that anymore. Mm-hmm. The dominance of Real Madrid and Barcelona, it doesn't matter if Real Madrid wins the league this season, right? The fact that Girona is even there is a big deal, right? They're part of the Manchester City group. But the fact they're there is a big deal for the competitive parity of La Liga. It is ultimately a good thing. In the same vein that Arsenal refining their form, Villa coming to the fore, even teams like Brighton making late runs in and incursions into the European spots every so often. These are all good things. And so I agree with you. I really hope Leverkusen are able to stay. But before we go, Nolan, I just want us to look right back at the Premier League and look at this fixture list, because it is a short week, which means we're going to get Tuesday and Wednesday matches, and then these guys got to go to bed and wake up right again and be ready for potentially, in some cases, Saturday matches. You know, the midweek match, I think, everybody is going to be looking at, or at least one of the midweek matches everybody's going to be looking at, is going to be Manchester City versus Villa. Mm-hmm. That's going to be huge. It is going to be at the Etihad. You know, Nolan, looking at who everybody plays, does the top three shift at all, or do you think we in a holding pattern?
I don't think it shifts at all, but I do think that one of these are going to be a trap game. Not saying that they're going to lose, but I think one of them, like two of them, are going to dominate their match. I don't know if City will dominate Villa, but they could. They might go out and just 2-0 early in the first half for some reason. But I'll be honest, I hate to say it, that Arsenal-Luton looks really fun on paper right now, given that they just played Sunday. That's my only reasoning. Arsenal are much better than Luton, but I think that Luton aren't going to back down. That's all I'm saying.
I think the Villa City match is the one. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say Arsenal-Luton because it's at the Emirates.
Right.
And I think Arsenal are just a different beast at home. And on top of that, to be honest, I just don't see it. Like, the Arsenal, when Luton last played Arsenal, they were just finding that stride, right? They haven't seen this Arsenal.
That's true.
That scored 35 some odd goals since the new year or something crazy like that, right? Like, they haven't seen this team. So I don't think that's necessarily a banana skin game. I do think the City game is one. And, you know, Liverpool, we expect them to go out and dominate Sheffield, but I feel like Sheffield just does crazy stuff every now and then, and just like scores 2 goals out of nowhere and then just concedes 12.
Yeah.
So it'll be exciting.
I was going to say, Sheffield just scored 3 over the weekend. Yeah. And you have to think, Sheffield have nothing to play for. They might go and say, what if we just spoil Liverpool's party? I mean, why not?
What a story that would be. If clearly relegated bottom of the table, Sheffield United, even if they just split points with Liverpool, that's not going to happen. This is a pipe dream.
For sure.
From a delusional Arsenal fan. But anyway, that is going to be that. Nolan, as usual, you get the last word.
So I did some research. You know me, I like to do my extracurricular activity. And I saw that every single match on Saturday had an 85th minute goal, other than Crystal Palace and Nottingham Forest. Every single one had a late goal in it to either tie or win the match. I mean, are we just giving up defense at the end of the match now?
Nah, just tired. We tired. That's what it is, man.